Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 193rd edition of the Feuerstein's Fires American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at SoccerNewsDay.com. Ladies and gentlemen, chat room is open. Come on in. Talk amongst yourselves. If you have a question for me, though, I'll try to answer to the best of my abilities. And let's get this bit of business out of the way first. News from the Pittsburgh Riverhounds earlier this week in May 19th, I understand, or maybe a little earlier. The Pittsburgh Riverhounds have parted ways with head coach Justin Evans. At least I think the story came out this last Tuesday, or last Wednesday. Right now the Pittsburgh Riverhounds are with an interim head coach. I don't know who is the person who has taken over for Mr. Justin Evans, but big news in the USL Pro League, Justin Evans has been relieved of his duties. So that's a big, big shock right there because they have a big Open Cup match this coming Wednesday, or shall I say next Wednesday, actually not this coming Wednesday, but next Wednesday on the 28th in round three as they're hosting RWB Adria from Chicago. So big news there and other things going on as well. Don't forget next week on the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show, episode number 194 will be on Monday, May 26th. And then after you watch the Red Bulls at Sporting Kansas City, the USA-Azerbaijan friendly will be up. The send-off series will get underway on the West Coast, and that will be a 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific start time. And after the match, come on over to the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer early Wednesday night, Tuesday morning, or late Tuesday night, early Wednesday morning, as we'll review it. And then, of course, Wednesday night, third round of the U.S. Open Cup gets underway, all those matches, and on Friday, May 30th, round three review of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. So everything happening, 1, 2, 3 over here. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be great. And I know for one thing only is this, is that you will get all this coverage here on the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show on blogtalkradio.com/Feuerstein's Fire. Well, folks, as we talked about last week, the television contract for Major League Soccer and U.S. Soccer has already been announced. ESPN has re-upped. Fox Sports comes back. NBC Sports is no longer in the picture till the end of this calendar year. You know, I think you've heard me many, many times discuss that NBC Sports has done a magical job with how they produced the game of soccer, the game of football in the United States. And I can understand why some are feeling that they used Major League Soccer probably as a stepping stone to get their number one priority, and that is the Premier League from England, on their television channels. Now, the big question, of course, is, was there real dedication coming from NBC? Personally, I'd like to think there was, that they wanted to continue the relationship. Obviously, it's not the asking price Major League Soccer was looking for from NBC Sports. And unfortunately, there will be no longer with MLS after the 2014 season. Let me say this with this new contract. I am happy. There will be a dedicated soccer night for everyone when they watch MLS. ESPN, Fox Sports 1 will have back-to-back broadcasts on Sunday nights. The Friday nights will be dedicated to Univision with their continued dedication to the league, and Saturdays will now just be for those local sports network regional affiliates for Saturdays. And this makes me happy. This does make me happy that we're finally getting some respect here, television-wise, from MLS, or for MLS, if you want to say. I'm happy that we're going to get some dedicated coverage now, and it's not going to be jumped all over the place. People know where they're going to find it, and at the same time, this will not interfere with any of the other sports that ESPN and Fox Sports will be putting on their channels. NASCAR is no longer on ESPN on Sunday, so that means ESPN will have MLS to fill in those slots. Fox Sports 1, which of course has their big Major League Baseball contract on Saturdays, along with Fox Sports National, will be having their baseball uninterrupted. So what does this mean for soccer? It means that we get our dedicated time slots. We get our dedicated day. And you know what? That makes me happy because you don't have to jump around or go through hoops just to find when your MLS game of the week will be on certain channels. You heard Steve Lepore last week discussing this on this show about basically how it's going to be covered, the people that will be a part of it. Once again, I'd like to think that we're going to get ourselves quality people broadcasting and talking about our game, our league, and our national team. Some, of course, are not happy that it sounds like Gus Johnson is going to stay. And, of course, we all know about Gus Johnson. Yes, he does not come from a soccer background. He's mostly calling when he used to do Knicks games on MSG, on TV, to fill in for Mike Breen or on the radio. He's done college basketball on CBS, on ESPN. He's also – and Fox Sports now. He has also done – the NFL games on CBS. And I understand why people are upset because of this situation. But let me say this. I really, really believe in this. I understand you want the people that grew up watching this game, that have dedicated their lives to this game. And you know, Gus Johnson, to me, I think he's done a good job. Does he need some help? Yes. Is Eric Winalda the right analyst to be with him? I don't know. I think maybe Gus might need someone else. But I want to talk about myself here. Did I come directly from a soccer background? To be honest with you, no. My parents took me to the old Cosmos games at Giant Stadium to see the original Cosmos and the original North American Soccer League. The league ended in the mid-80s. Baseball was my first passion. The NFL, hockey, basketball. I got back into the game in 1994 when the World Cup came. Major League Soccer came in 1996. And from that point on, I have been dedicated to the game ever since. Now, I didn't come straight from a soccer background either. My parents and my family, yes. when they were in Europe? Myself, no. I never ridiculed the sport when I stopped it being interested in it. I wanted to do well in it. And after the 94 World Cup, I said to myself, I'm going to support a team in MLS when it comes. And you know what? I've been doing just fine. All of you know where I'm coming from. All of you know the person that I am, loving this game, and I will defend the game. And if there are people that are not from a soccer background that wants to give it a shot and just be honest, truthful, give it a go, I will not go against them because at least they want to learn. Gus Johnson wants to learn. All I'm saying is just to give him a fair chance. Everyone's already condemned him because he's not a soccer announcer. I understand that. But what happens, let's just say for the hell of it, what happens if the passion for the game has overtaken Gus Johnson? What happens if maybe, just maybe, maybe he does a fantastic job covering and calling MLS? Would you give him an opportunity? I understand JP Delacamere has done a great job since the beginning. You know, John Strong, Glenn Davis, all these people, Taylor Twellman, Bredos, I can name you these people over and over and over because they've been with it from the beginning, and I understand that. But what if Gus Johnson does do a great job? What if Gus Johnson actually does the job and he is a hit? Are you still going to let him have it because he didn't have soccer in his blood from the start? This is not a bandwagon thing. This is not someone brainwashing me. I want to see the game in this country do well, not just on the field, not just in the stands, but the broadcast as well. And if Gus Johnson, and it sounds like he's warm to the idea of calling soccer games, you know what? Give him a real opportunity for giving him a chance. A chance. That's all I'm saying. Give him a real chance. Because I'll be honest, I think he's done well. I think Gus Johnson has actually done a fantastic job in calling these games. Blame Fox Sports if you want for throwing him into the lion's den too late. That's all I have to say. Gus Johnson, if you're listening to this program, I got your back. Good luck, sir, when we get MLS in 2015 for Fox Sports 1. Everyone, I've got a great show for you tonight. My good friend Earl Reed, who covers the Philadelphia Union, will be joining us a little bit later. I'll have Mr. Clint Alexander, who's the chief executive officer of the San Diego Flash in the National Premier Soccer League. He'll be coming on to talking about the club. NESL segment will review the sixth round of the spring season. And also the Red Bull segment has been cut short a little bit, 45 minutes. We're going to talk about their 2-0 loss up in Toronto. My first guest tonight was not able to come on live. He's over at the Wake Med Soccer Park right now with the under-20s Carolina Railhawks friendly. But we had a nice little taped conversation talking about this spring season in the NESL that is about to come to an end in 3 weeks.
Daniel Feuerstein here on the American Soccer Show, and joining me from the Independent down in Cary, it is Neil Morris, who covers the Carolina Railhawks in the NESL. Neil, thanks for the time, and how's it going?
It's going great, Daniel. It's always be good. It's always good to be with you.
Always great to have you on. Three games remaining now in the NASL spring season, and it really looks like it might be one of those moments where it might go down the wire. The standings at the moment look kind of tight in the top four. You say the top four. I want to say the top five, but Minnesota United in front with the Cosmos, and Fort Lauderdale tied for second, and San Antonio and Carolina tied for fourth.
Sure, with a nine-game spring season, I guess this was destined to happen. It would have taken a very unusual set of circumstances for any team to break away from the pack with just nine games in the season. You look at Minnesota United, who's top of the table right now. They've played six games. They've won five, yet they only lead Fort Lauderdale and New York Cosmos by 3 points. So anything can happen. As you said, there's two other teams that are 5 points, back of Minnesota with 3 games to play for all teams. San Antonio and the Carolina Railhawks are both sitting in tied for fourth place with 10 points each. This sort of compressed, tight race is what the league wanted when they scheduled this nine-game spring season, and that's what they're going to get.
And they're going to get double amount once the fall season gets underway after the World Cup. Let's start bottom up. We'll go with the Railhawks and the Scorpions. Both have 10 points. San Antonio has a +2 on the differential, while Carolina has a -1. What is it about the Railhawks right now that you see either this is where they're going to finish, or do you think they can surprise with these last 3 weeks?
I think Carolina is playing the long game. They've got 3 games left, but 2 are on the road where they haven't won a game all year, and they have only won one road game since the end of the 2012 season. So the notion that they're going to pull out 2 victories on the road would be surprising, to say the least. So that's why, you know, with being 5 points back and only one game at Wake Med Soccer Park left, I'm not giving the Railhawks a tremendous chance to be able to leapfrog 4 other teams and win the spring season. But as Carolina knows, there's going to be a 4-team playoff at the end of the entire season, and whoever wins the spring is merely disqualified from qualifying for the other 3 spots. So the key for Carolina is to be within shooting distance of that top 4 and get in the playoffs, and then anything can happen. But with Carolina having 2 road games out of 3 left, and Carolina was one of those teams that had one fewer home game than the other half of the league because of some scheduling quirks, they were always going to be behind the 8-ball. They won every game at home, but they've lost 2 on the road and drawn the other. And then the 2 road games that they have left are at first place Minnesota this Saturday, and then they end the spring season at Edmonton, which is always a difficult place to travel to and play.
Yeah, absolutely. Going up into central part of, or the mountain region of Canada, in between Winnipeg and Vancouver, is always going to be a tough area over there in the Canadian Rockies. San Antonio is just ahead of you, as we've said already in the standings, with a +2 differential ahead of Carolina. What does Alan Marchina, the head coach of San Antonio, need to do to maybe give the Scorpions that push to maybe upset either Minnesota or the Cosmos for that top spot?
Well, you know, Fort Lauderdale has a difficult stretch of games coming up. They still have to play the Cosmos and San Antonio. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Fort Lauderdale is sitting there in third place on goal differential and only 3 points back of Minnesota, but they also have they have 3 difficult games left. Fort Lauderdale, they have to travel to Tampa this week, which is always an interesting Florida derby,
mm-hmm.
and then they have to travel to New York to take on the Cosmos next on the 31st, and then Fort Lauderdale ends the spring season at San Antonio. So, you know, back to the Scorpions, you know, they've got a very interesting game coming up this weekend. They go to Ottawa, which is an expansion franchise, and they're sitting in sixth place with 7 points. But Ottawa's played fairly well on their sort of temporary field, and it's been a difficult place for a lot of teams to go and compete. If San Antonio can get 3 points out of this weekend, they go to last placed Indy the next week, and then host Fort Lauderdale the next week. So I think this week is going to tell you a lot about whether the Scorpions are going to be in play or not. You know, if Minnesota beats Carolina this week and San Antonio doesn't win in Ottawa, Carolina and San Antonio are going to be out of contention for the spring season based on points alone. So, you know, to know whether or not San Antonio is going to be in the mix, I think this weekend at Ottawa is going to answer a lot of questions.
Yeah, I will agree with you there. What has head coach of Fort Lauderdale, Gunter Kronsteiner, done with this team so far? I mean, obviously last year was a little strange with the situation in Edmonton, and it looks like so far with the 6 games already in hand, what do you think he's done to change the fortunes with the Strikers so far that they are in contention with the Cosmos and Minnesota?
Well, if you remember, I'm going to give Colin Clark some credit here. If you remember on your pre-NESL preview show that a lot of us participated in a month or so ago, you know, I brought up the fact that in discussions with Railhawks coach Colin Clark, I'd asked him which team in the league does he think is going to surprise people, who's better than people are expecting, and he said the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. So, you know, he was one of, I don't think even Strikers fans believe that they had a shot to be sitting in second or third place at this point in the spring season. What have they done different? I think they've done several things, and it's interesting because probably one of the Strikers' worst losses was at Carolina. So I sort of saw them at their worst. But they got rid of a lot of players in the locker room who were not buying into Kronsteiner's philosophy, cleaned out some attitudes, I think, in the locker room that were divisive. And they brought in some good players to bolster that front line. You know, they've scored a lot of goals. Fort Lauderdale has scored the most goals in the league with 14. Now, they've also given up 10, which is the third most in the league. And that's kind of what everybody expected out of Fort Lauderdale, that their offense was going to click and their defense was going to have questions. And that's exactly what happened. If they can get ahead of a team and sort of push the issue, then they have the type of offense that is going to do well. I think a big key for them is twofold. One, Martin Nunez has come in. They brought him in after, I think he spent last year at Minnesota and scored 4 goals. And Mark Anderson is healthy, and he is a difference maker in the midfield. So when you put together those two players, you've got an offensive attack that can really cause problems for a second division defense or second division defenses that can often struggle to keep attacking offenses at bay. You know, Carolina's a good example. They're a tremendous offensive team in Cary, and they can make good defenses look really bad, and I think Fort Lauderdale is much the same. Now, as I said, I think Fort Lauderdale's benefited by having played the weaker part of their schedule already. They have 3 tough games coming up, and so we're going to find out what they're made of here in the late stages of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. It should be very exciting to see what's going to happen here. And finally, we'll go to Minnesota, because we already know what the Cosmos are made of, obviously. They haven't lost anyone on their roster, and they're always going to be competing in these seasons in the NESL. But Minnesota, Manny Lagos, who's, of course, the head coach of this Minnesota United team, I mean, it seems like he's got the same players. They made a couple of additions here and there, but it looks like they've bought into the team, or at least the players have bought into the coach with Manny, what is it about Manny that's getting that he's getting the best out of his players right now?
Well, I think a lot of the success of Minnesota is an exaggerated example of what I just said about Fort Lauderdale. Not necessarily offense, but Manny getting his players in place. You know, last year Minnesota spent a lot of money, not that they didn't this year, but they spent even more to bring in a lot of sort of high-profile D2 players, and the chemistry was completely off, and it was a miserable season for Lagos, and the team never gelled, and they finished next to last in the standings. This year, Manny was given the latitude to jettison the players that he didn't want and keep or bring in the players that he did want. And what has happened is that they have been able to grind out victories. You know, they put three on Fort Lauderdale last week, and they put three on Indy 11 a couple of weeks before that. But you know, they've also ground out victories over San Antonio and Edmonton and Ottawa. So they're an interesting team in that they're able to play defense when they need to, and they're able to put some goals in the back of the net when they need to, which is a bit interesting because, you know, with Pablo Campos going down in the preseason, we thought that they were going to struggle mightily to score goals. And somehow, some way, these guys have bought into Manny's system, particularly Christian Ramirez, who was the NESL Player of the Week last week and is leading the team with four goals. Miguel Ibarra has been a spark plug for them this year. He's got two goals and two assists. So, you know, I think they've kept the talent that would buy into the system, and they jettisoned the talent that wasn't buying in. And one other thing Minnesota did this year, which can't be discounted, is they had a very robust preseason. You know, much was written about their training trip to England, where they trained and played some scrimmages against a few clubs over there. They played a number of teams back stateside, which is in sharp contrast to last year, where they had a very paltry preseason. And I think if we learned anything the last couple of years particularly, is that the teams who play a robust preseason tend to get out of the gate very quickly. And the ones that don't sometimes struggle. And in addition to all the chemistry issues that I talked about with Minnesota, you know, their preseason this year was incredibly full, and they came ready to play right out of the gate this year, as opposed to last year where they stumbled and never found their footing.
Right, right. Well, it looks like it's going to be interesting because Minnesota will be, as we have these last three games of the regular season here in the spring season, Minnesota, as you said, they'll be home to Carolina this coming Saturday at 8 o'clock over at the National Sports Center Stadium. Then the final two will be on the road in Atlanta on May 31st. And then on June 7th, they'll be in Tampa Bay. Could Minnesota, because to me it's going to be these two road games to finish off the spring season that could give them some problems if they do drop points.
That's correct. You know, the schedule works out well. If they get a win at home against Carolina this weekend, then they eliminate Carolina and San Antonio from spring season contention, no matter what those other teams do this weekend. I mean, Carolina would obviously lose. San Antonio, even if they won, would still be 5 points back with two to play. So then it essentially boils down to a three-team race with 2 weeks to go. Minnesota goes to Atlanta, which tends to be a little bit of a difficult place to play, although Atlanta has struggled and is certainly currently sitting second to last in the standings. And then the last week of the season, they travel to Tampa, which normally you think is a difficult place to go, but Tampa, along with Edmonton, have been the two most disappointing teams this spring season. Edmonton really thought that they could be a mid-table team, and they're sitting there with 5 points next to last in the league. Tampa only has 6 points, tied for seventh. and has really had some difficult games, and now the injury bug is catching up to them. So Minnesota, I think that last game at Tampa is really tricky, but you know, win this weekend makes it a three-team race. Then if they could hold serve in Atlanta, they've got their destiny in their hands last week of the season.
Absolutely. Neil, thanks a lot for the time. I appreciate it. And talk to you soon before or after this Cup. Thank you.
Anytime, Daniel. Thank you.
And that was Neil Morris of The Independent down in Cary, North Carolina, talking about this exciting spring season in the NASL. Joining me right now, a gentleman for the first time is on the 46th Fire American Soccer Show. He is the Chief Executive Officer of the San Diego Flash in the National Premier Soccer League. It's Clint Alexander. Clint, thank you for the time. I appreciate it, and welcome to the show.
Hey, Daniel. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate
nope.
what you do.
Oh, no problem. Thank you so much for coming on. This is really a pleasure, and it's awesome to have you on. Now, the San Diego Flash is a club that was originally, with the same logo, was originally in the old A-League, of course, when it merged with the USL First Division. When did you and Mr. Warren Barton acquire the rights to the crest and the name to be brought back to American soccer in San Diego?
Well, back in 2008, I moved to San Diego, and the club had gone away since probably around 2001. So, you know, when I first moved to San Diego in 2008, I was looking around kind of going, wow, there's still no pro soccer in a city like San Diego. That's kind of ridiculous. So I restarted the club from being a partner in it before. I met Warren about a year later. He was on board with the concept of us building a soccer team from the ground up, as opposed to the other way around. And ever since then, it's been this magical ride.
And, of course, you're in the National Premier Soccer League in a division with the Sacramento Gold. I'm sorry, that's wrong. That's my fault. Excuse me. In the Southwest Conference with FC Force, FC Hasenthal, FC Santa Clarita, Temecula FC, and Delray City FC. How competitive is this conference, and how competitive is the NPSL?
Well, the thing that I'll tell you about the NPSL a lot of people don't know is that we're literally the largest league in the country. There's a footprint of teams in 80 cities around the country. So that's something that we're really proud of. We're considered the fourth division in the United States. The level of soccer is, I mean, the best comparison that I give you is that, you know, go back to the U.S. Open Cup a couple of years ago when you had this team from Cal FC who made a run all the way up to the higher levels of the U.S. Open Cup. So, you know, when you're talking about competitive soccer in the United States, it's not the same as the other big three sports. So our brand mm-hmm. of soccer here in San Diego, especially with Warren Barton as our head coach, the level of talent that's here in San Diego, we're a highly competitive team. And people that take the time to come out and watch us play, they definitely see that when they see our guys playing on the pitch.
Oh, I bet it's very competitive. I bet the San Diego Flash is a very big force to be reckoned with in the Southwest Conference of the NPSL. Unfortunately, you could not compete in your second round matchup in the U.S. Open Cup against PSA Elite. I feel bad for you guys. I feel bad for everyone in San Diego that it couldn't be done. What were the reasons why you had to forfeit? And let me just say, it was a shame that it had to happen.
Well, I have to chalk it up to a bad set of circumstances that started with a late announcement putting the draw out there, which, you know, for teams like us that don't have our own facility, we're sort of at the whim of, you know, school administrators or other people who may have reserved fields ahead of us. And for us to, you know, be able to reserve a field within a, you know, 2 or 3 week period of time, or if it gets down to like a 48-hour type of situation, it comes highly difficult, not just here in San Diego, but, you know, I'm hearing literally nationwide. So it was really unfortunate.
But getting back to the task at hand, you know, our goal now is we're back focused on, winning our division, winning our conference, and then winning our the championship for the NPSL and bringing it home to San Diego.
Absolutely, and let's hope that does happen for the Flash. We talked a couple of weeks ago about something interesting about the Flash that I never knew, and I think it's a wonderful thing. You can inform the audience about this great thing that you're doing, I should say, for the public good and for the good of the club, and what is that?
Well, if you're referring to us going public, that's something that we've been working on for about 5 years. And what's really kind of cool about it is that, we're sort of like, for a lot of people that are familiar, like the Green Bay Packers, where we've put a business model out there where fans can actually be part owners of our club. So if you're an individual out there that, you know, if you recognize that soccer is going to keep growing in the United States, if you recognize that San Diego is a good place for the growth of soccer in the future, and you want to take that ride with us, then you can become a part owner of our club. And so far, we've had, over the last 4 or 5 years, close to 100 people who've joined into our partnership, and that's how our club moves forward.
Wow, that is really fantastic to hear. I think this is like another club that just joined the NPSL. I think it's that Nashville FC that has almost probably the same thing the Flash is doing. This is an absolutely fantastic thing. And it doesn't matter if they're from San Diego or if they're from outside San Diego, anyone can try to sign up as a part owner of the Flash?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that on our website at sandiegoflashsoccer.com, there we have a page for the investors, and on that page is the list of all of our current senior part owners. And what's kind of funny is over the last 4 years, we've got different people from all walks of life, from all over the country. There's even like 3 people from Toronto, Canada, who are part owners in the club because, I mean, again, at the end of the day, it's not rocket science. If you can see that the future of soccer is going to continue to grow in the United States, you know, I hate to use a worn-out terminology, but, I mean, you're literally getting in on the growth of soccer with us at the ground floor level.
Wow. That is absolutely fantastic stuff. And, I encourage everyone and anyone, if they want to be involved with a club in this form of manner, please do so. It's absolutely an opportunity I don't think anyone would want to miss. What's it like to work with Warren Barton? Obviously, former Premier League player for Newcastle United. Obviously, he's with Fox Sports on their coverage for the UEFA Champions League, the FA Cup, of course, the brand new contract with MLS and the Bundesliga coming next year. What's it like to have a man like Warren Barton involved with the San Diego Flash?
Well, you know, on a professional level, it's been awesome because, like I said, with him living here in San Diego, him literally being, I mean, there's no one in the entire county of San Diego that has his credibility or his pedigree or his background. And so for him to be our coach, it attracts all the best players to come to want to come and play for the San Diego Flash. On a business level, he's a very good person to work with because he's a very intelligent person. Some of the decisions that we've made together have worked out very, very well. And on a personal level, I mean, he's just a fun guy. One of the things that I really appreciate about him is that as much of a celebrity that he is, he's actually still a very humble person. And he's not afraid to get in and do things that, otherwise you would think that a celebrity would not do. I mean, like, one example that's pretty funny is that, when the guys turn in their uniforms, they all give them to him, and the uniforms go home with Warren. So to a certain degree, you know, our players literally have Warren Barton doing their laundry for them. So, so you know, these are the things that, you know, he and I work well together, along with the rest of our coaching staff, with David Banks and Jerome Watson, Brian Kugel, and Kara Wickerod, who's our trainer, Rob Watson, who works with us in the back office. So, you know, we have a very great team of people that work with the Flash, and, you know, all together, you know, there's no one person that stands out. We all work together as a team, and we make things happen for the San Diego Flash.
So does that mean that Warren Barton wears a polo shirt on the sideline? Is he sponsored by Tide, Cheer, or Snuggles?
Well, I'll tell you what, here's something interesting for you. Just this last past week, we unveiled new jerseys, and they're in the black and whites that Warren used to wear at Newcastle United. And what's kind of interesting about that is that now that we're wearing the same black and white stripes as Newcastle United, we're actually starting to get people who want to buy the same jersey, and people from around the, like, you know, his Twitter followers from around the world, and obviously some people here in San Diego, but people are already starting to buy our jerseys. So if there is a sponsor out there that wants a walking billboard, they definitely need to get a hold of us, because people are wearing our jerseys from around the world right now.
Absolutely. And, of course, go to SanDiegoFlashSoccer.com and contact Mr. Alexander for that sponsorship opportunity. Obviously, I would have to assume the next best thing, or the next project, after having a club ready to go here in the NPSL, is to create, or at least to acquire land to build your own stadium. Is that kind of like in the distance at the moment, or is there an ambition to make it happen as fast as possible?
Well, I'll tell you that it's something. I'll say it like this: it's something that I've thought about since day one. It's something that I've looked into for the past year to a year and a half. But at this point, that's probably the most that I can say right now. Right now, we have to kind of take things one step at a time. So once we get the club, I'm anticipating that we'll have the club to a point where we're publicly traded within the next, quarter or so. And, you know, once we've made that announcement, then we can announce what our next plans are.
Well, let me say this, that you have my full backing for the Flash, and I do hope you will get your own stadium, because I hope that the Flash will qualify again for the U.S. Open Cup for 2015, and that these problems will never happen again, and you'll have your own ground to definitely celebrate and play hard-nosed football. Mr. Alexander, thank you so much for the time. I really do appreciate it. Thank you for coming on the show, and good luck the rest of this NPSL season.
Okay, Daniel, thank you again. Again, I really appreciate your podcast, and, you know, keep rocking out there.
I definitely will. Exactly.
All right, man, grow the game.
We're going to grow the game. Thank you. And that's Clint Alexander from the San Diego Flash, the chief executive officer of the Flash. As, boy, oh, boy, you know, it's always great to see people coming in and doing their part and growing the game, just like we're always growing the game, because it's not just the players, it's not just the coaches and the facilities, it's also how to inform everyone and what's going on. And speaking about informing people, my good friend Earl Reed, who covers the Philadelphia Union, has joined me today. Earl, how are you, and what's going on?
Hello, Dr. Forrestein. Things are going pretty well, as far as I'm concerned. As far as the Union are concerned, they've seen some better days, but you know, you got to start somewhere, I guess.
I guess so. You know, I have to say I am a little shocked at how the Philadelphia Union have started to play. I mean, we talked about during the preview shows that Maurice Edu coming over, could have been the start of something, and then all of a sudden you trade away Jack McInerney to the Montreal Impact for Wenger, and it just looks like things are not going the way, I guess, John Hackworth planned.
I think that's fair to say, but you know, there's been a lot of different things that have happened, but yeah, it's there were some early indications of trouble spots, you know, even in the early months, you know, in March. You know, McInerney was traded at a point where the Union were already starting to struggle a bit. You thought maybe they would pull out of it, and then McInerney was traded, and they've gotten Andrew Wenger, who I think is a promising forward slash midfielder. I mean, he's played just about everywhere except goalkeeper from what I've heard in the past. But, you know, one of the things that was really difficult for them is McInerney was a proven goal scorer, had a number of goals in the hot start there last year. And bringing in Wenger, he's definitely had some goals. And he scored, you know, he had goals in Montreal, and he opened up his account in the first match for the Union. But since then, he hasn't had that luck fall his way. And generally speaking, the forwards for the Union have not been scoring in this stretch where they have, you know, struggled pretty mightily here. They did get a good win against Sporting Kansas City at Sporting Park there last Wednesday. But aside from that, it's been a pretty rough run for the Union.
I mean, you go from – I know it's still early in the season. There's been a probably combination nearly – well, at the moment, Philadelphia is the leader in the Eastern Conference with 13 games played already. And you already have 11 points, but you're drastically below in the bottom of the East. I mean, you got Montreal, who's dead last with 7. The Fire have it, and Toronto FC have probably 1 point higher than the Union. Columbus has 2 points higher than the Union. I mean, it's still kind of a tight race at the moment, even though there's a break coming up soon. Can the Union turn it around? Can they find a way to boost themselves back into the top end of the Eastern Conference?
Well, I think there's still plenty of time. I mean, that's the thing. If you look at the Eastern Conference standings, they're not terribly far out. Now, they, like you said, they have this, you know, other teams have games in hand on them. Toronto has only played 8, so they've got 5 games, a potential of 15 points there. And, you know, they're currently 1 point ahead of them in the standings. But, you know, the Red Bulls at 14 points are only 1 win ahead of the Union right now. So, I mean, it's the Union. Now, again, and New York has a game in hand. So, again, it's really tough right now with these standings because the games played are so much different. It's tough to really get to sort things out. But what you can do is look at the points per game, and the Union are at a below 1 point per game clip, which isn't good at all. You know, it's second worst in the league right now. Montreal is the only team that is out, underperforming the Union right now, and it's just very, you know, it's very frustrating for fans. They're starting to show the emotions at the games. I think the other trouble is the Union seem to play better when they're on the road, and that could be a function of teams that are able to take the game at the Union, and so that provides them the counterattack space to be able to go at a team as opposed to when they're playing at home and teams may be willing to bunker in a little bit more, like you saw some poor results, you know, 1-0 loss to DC United at PPL Park. Montreal, who was, like we already talked about, is terrible. We got a 1-0 victory. That was on the road. But still, there have been some poor results. And this weekend was sort of, meeting the buzzsaw of New England Revolution, and New England just, you know, tore the defense apart 5-3. Philadelphia pulled back a couple of late goals to make it a slightly more palatable final result. But, the Revolution are just a team that is on fire, and, you know, I don't think anybody wants to be facing them right now.
Yeah, right now New England's just absolutely tearing it up. I can't believe I've been seeing that too, and I think this is like the second or third season with Jay Heaps as head coach. talk about, because at the time, obviously, you had Jack McInerney starting in the 11 before he got traded. Antoine Hoppenot, who, of course, is probably coming off the bench. How has he been performing now? Because, I mean, I always thought that Hoppenot and McInerney would be at least a 1-2 punch with McInerney in the midfield and Hoppenot up top, whoever his striker partner was going to be. I thought that was like the future for the Union, but that's kind of now on the back burner depending on what Maurice Adu is going to do with you guys, with your guys. And how is he holding up? Is he still coming off the bench, or is he now starting up top with Latu, or is it something different?
No, Wenger and Casey have been the two forwards that have been starting mostly. Hoppenot he had a rough start to the season. He had some sub appearances, but they weren't all that effective. He was, John Hackworth changed the tactics going into this season, trying to play a little bit more, along the ground, playing shorter passing style, sort of the Kansas City 4-5-1, 4-3-3, whatever you want to call it. And, I think that's made it a little bit more difficult on a guy like Antoine Hoppenot, that he tended to be subbed in for Jack McInerney early in the season, and they're just not quite the same player. Hoppenot is almost more of a wing-type player who can make runs at the defense, but he's not really in that whole, making smart runs, trying to get on the back shoulder, exploit space behind the defense. He can do that, but he seems to be better when he can pick the ball up and just take a run at someone and try to navigate around them, potentially get clipped. And he has a little bit of that reputation. But, the forwards have really been sort of the disappointing out of the Union this year. The midfield has been better. The defense has been sort of hit or miss. But I think the forwards, I think the fact that the team isn't scoring a whole lot, now they got 3 goals against New England, a couple of them late, but they're just not putting the goals in the net. And they've been getting chances, but a lot of times they've been failing to find the target with the shots, and they've also got some really bad breaks. Against DC United, was it against DC United? I can't.
Yes.
I'm getting these games are running together, but there was a flurry of chances, like 3 in a row, where I believe it was DC United, where I think Wenger, then Casey, and then the follow-up person, each hit a shot from basically the penalty spot, and it got blocked by the goalkeeper or a defender each time. And it was just like, it was sort of like the microcosm of the season for the Union, because it's just like they have trouble finishing right now. And if they can get that sorted out, they're not that far out of the playoffs, but they've got to get this squared away really quickly. Maurice Adu may be going away on international duty for the World Cup if he makes Klinsmann's 23. He's already there now in the provisional 30. The guy who's really been impressive for the Union this year has been Vincent Noguera, a guy from Sochaux who was relegated this year, but they picked him up before the season, and he has just been a beast in the midfield, pretty much doing it all at this point. He scored a cracker of a goal against New England, a real nice long shot that just whizzed right by Brad Knighton in goal in that match. So just a really great player to have. If they can get the midfield sorted out a little bit more and get these forwards finishing, I think this is a team that could definitely find themselves in that mix for the squeaking into the playoffs. But they really got to get that sorted out because we had a little chat. We messaged each other at the time of the McInerney trade, and we both kind of felt like the forwards took a little bit of a step back here. And it's no knock on Andrew Wenger, but it's going to take him time to feel out what the Union want him to do and to connect with the other players on the team. And the guy is a hard-working forward. You can tell he busts his hump. He's all over the place. He is pretty decent at holding up the ball. but it's just going to take a little bit more time, I think, for him to really make it connect with the team. So if he can turn it around, you get a couple of the other forwards working it out, you know, that would really mean a lot to this team, I believe.
Oh, I agree with you. I think Philadelphia is still a dangerous side. It all depends on the main guy getting his tactics and formations correctly, and that's John Hackworth. And I guess the next question is this. Is he in trouble firing, going into the firing line to being sacked?
You know, I don't think he is. I think Nick Sakevich has, the team CEO and president has, put his support behind Hackworth. The fans are a little bit restless, actually probably a little more than a little. they've been chanting about firing Hackworth at games. I believe the fans were singing Bohemian Rhapsody during the middle of this New England game because they weren't.
No.
And so there is some signs of unrest. I think this Kansas City result for the Union probably bought him some more time. It certainly would help his cause to get a result out in Los Angeles. They have two matches coming up here, one against the Galaxy and the other against Chivas USA. If you haven't looked, the Galaxy are at the bottom of the Western Conference. That doesn't mean they're by any stretch an easy out or anything like that. But, if they can get some points on the road, which I've said that, they've tended to play better on the West Coast, on the road. They played well in Portland to start the season, and they played Seattle pretty tough there a couple weeks ago. That would help. You'd like to see them enter, and then they have a home match against Vancouver before the World Cup break. That would be the one concern for me, is if they entered the World Cup break on a real down note, because that might be the time that you see, a front office say, well, we've got a couple weeks here to sort of integrate another guy, get him, get things squared away, get him, get things, settled, tactics, whatever needs to change. But besides the point that Sakevich seems to be supporting Hackworth, largely there has been pretty good play out of the team. The one thing that I think is probably the biggest criticism of Hackworth is often his choices. The biggest thing that happened this offseason in that regard, it was the conversion of Aaron Wheeler, who was a target forward, a tall forward, into a defender. And he started some matches over Austin Berry, who is a Rookie of the Year winner. And I think a lot of fans questioned that and wondered about the prudence of that. And so seems like now Wheeler started against New England this weekend, and that may not happen again. it probably will at some point. But there are just some questionable things about John Hackworth, and as long as there are questionable decisions made by him, starting players that aren't what a lot of fans might consider in the best 11 for the team, there's always going to be this grumbling if they aren't winning. Now, if they win, a lot of things kind of get papered over, just like any team. And, this is Philadelphia, which obviously there's a stigma that comes with this city, I think. We've heard it all the time, booing Santa Claus, yada, yada, yada. I don't think, Philadelphians don't take a whole lot of pride in those kinds of stereotypes, but
yeah, I got more if you want.
They aren't afraid to be vocal if things aren't right. Things don't appear to be right in their mind. And so this isn't a big surprise. The question is, can John Hackworth's team rally around him like they did against Ford in Kansas City? They got him a big win there. They clearly were, doing that for him. They had a goal celebration in the first goal they got, where they went over and basically hugged him and crowded around him. So, clearly it's if they can get the results that he needs, then I think he'll be just fine throughout the rest of the season. But, the fans aren't going to sit by quietly, as we've seen. And unfortunately for Hackworth, that's you know, only going to fuel speculation heading into the World Cup. We'll see what happens. That last Vancouver game at home at PPL Park on the 7th of June, I mean, that could be a big moment for him as far as what, you know, what's going on. But the two matches in L.A. should clarify this a little more, too, I think.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there. Before I let you go, Earl, for those of us not aware of it, please inform us of the gentleman who passed away that was the original member of the Sons of Ben, because it's feel very bad that this happened.
Oh, Eric Schertz. Yeah, he was a guy that has been one of the, yeah, like you said, one of the founding members of the Sons of Ben. There's been a lot of outpouring of, you know, emotions and, condolences from not only within the union organization, the Sons of Ben, but also other organizations around MLS. And it's the guy was from Cecil County, Maryland, which is sort of a not terribly far away from PPL Park, but it's, you know, and he was also a big part, from what I've seen, of this Bear Fight FC, which is a Sons of Ben started club team that plays in Wilmington, Delaware. So, I mean, it just sounds like an all-around good guy. And, you know, his son, teenager, and, you know, the team has sort of taken him under their wings a little bit. And, you know, it's great to see, you know, other organizations around MLS, you know, banding together, the DC United supporters too, you know, for a guy not very old at all, passing away suddenly, and you know, our hearts go out to the Schertz family, and it's you know, it's tough to find the words to say when something like this happens, but you know, like I said, the showing of you know, like the showings by the rest of the league, it shows the unity of the fan groups, and you know what that means within this community, soccer community, which is really, I mean, it's a global community too, but I think here in the U.S., with the situation soccer finds itself as sort of a, you know, sort of the fifth league. So, you know, it's like we're, you know, we kind of have to stick together, see a lot of people on Twitter and Facebook and whatnot. And so band together and stick up for each other, and in these types of situations, support each other when we lose one of our own. So,
absolutely. You know.
Thanks a lot.
Absolutely.
To all of them. Yep.
Well, before you go, again, where do you cover the union? On what sites?
PhillySoccerPage.net is my primary writing outlet right now. Actually, it's my only one for the union. I'll write about the union or about some other MLS-type topics. I did something on the TV deal last week, and I'll have an article out tomorrow. I think I'm going to be writing that about, you know, this whole issue of supporters, you know, showing disdain, and, you know, how appropriate is that? Because I think there's a lot of questions about that, and whether, you know, you're at the park and you should just show your support regardless of the situation or not. You know, there's been some talk about that on Twitter. So I don't know if I'll get it right or not, but we'll see.
What?
So,
come on now.
And you
we'll
can
always
find,
get it right.
Yeah. And I'm also on Twitter at Earl W. Reed. I changed my handle recently. Earl W. Reed is my handle. Mm-hmm. So I'm usually ranting about the union on game day. So so yeah, we'll see. We'll see what goes on with them here. Going, you know, hopefully they get things turned around, and it's a little bit peachier the next time I talk to you about the team.
Absolutely. Earl, thanks again. I'll talk to you soon, and let's see what the USA does in this World Cup when it comes around.
Yes, Daniel. Thank you very much.
No problem at all. It's my good friend Earl Reed, PhillySoccerPage.net, as he talks about everything going on in the Philadelphia Union over in MLS. And now, as we've extended the interviews, you get a lot of great content here on the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. We pushed back the NASL segment. We talked about the spring season and what's left for this spring season. And now let's talk about the games that are being and have been played here And it was a wild and wacky one, everyone, on Saturday, May 24th. Or that those are the games that will be played. Excuse me. May 17th on Saturday. A lot of wackiness going on. And as we go ahead and discuss these games, you can go for your coverage on NASL.com. The NASL.com has everything for you, including your viewing pleasure of the five games per week. Carolina Railhawks at home took on the Atlanta Silverbacks. It was a 2-0 win for the Railhawks. Mike Grella, the former Duke standout and the former Leeds United American player, had his first goal of that match in the 16th minute. Connor Tobin made it 2-0 for Carolina, and that would be the end of that as the Railhawks defeat the Atlanta Silverbacks by of 2-0 once again. Final score, Carolina Railhawks 2, Atlanta Silverbacks 0. The Indy 11 got themselves into trouble at home once again as they hosted the Ottawa Fury, and it was the Fury that burned the Indy 11. Anthony Donatelli got up race. He got his first of the match in the 16th minute, but Mike Ambersley equalizes in the 20th. Then it was a 2-goal explosion within 2 to 3 minutes. Omar Juan in the 40th minute made it 2-1 Ottawa. Donatelli with his brace in the 42nd minute, 3-1 Ottawa. But Ben Spencer pulls one back, and it's a 1-goal deficit for the Indy 11, 3-2 at half. But it was Oliver in the 68th minute. In the 68th minute, Oliver makes it 4-2 Ottawa, and that would be the end of that. Final score, Indy 11-2, Ottawa Fury 4. The Tampa Bay Rowdies hosting the New York Cosmos down at Al Lang Stadium, and it was all Cosmos in the second half. Mad Stukalainen in the 48th minute made it 1-0. Iosi with his goal 3 minutes later to make it 2-0. And then Paulo Mendez in the 62nd minute makes it 3-0 down at Al Lang Stadium. Final score, Tampa Bay Rowdies 0, New York Cosmos 3. And, of course, the league leaders, the top of the spring season table, Minnesota United FC hosting the Fort Lauderdale Strikers at the National Sports Center Stadium. And it was really not a bad match, but still, though, no contest. Simone Broccolello, first goal of the match in the 12th minute for Minnesota, 1-0. It was 1-0 at half, and then the second half, Martin Nunez makes it 1-1 in the 50th minute as he equalizes the match. Christian Ramirez, 8 minutes later for Minnesota, made it 2-1, and then 70th minute, Miguel Ibarra, 3-1. Minnesota United holds on to the top of the table. Final score, Minnesota United FC 3, the Fort Lauderdale Strikers 1. And then we have the San Antonio Scorpions hosting the FC Edmonton, and it would be a scoreless draw for these two sides. And the only thing to report, really, in this match is Malin Roberts of Edmonton. He was sent off in the 24th minute, so Edmonton was playing with a man down, and that would be the end of that. Final score once again, San Antonio 0, 10 men FC Edmonton 0. Here are the standings right now for spring season with three games to go. In first place with 15 points, it's the Minnesota United FC. 5 wins and a loss, plus 6. New York Cosmos in second place with 12 points. Four Lauderdale Strikers in third place, 12 points. Both teams with four wins and two losses, but the Cosmos have a +7 differential. Strikers with a +4 differential. And tied for fourth place, San Antonio Scorpions. Three wins, a draw, and two losses for 10 points. Carolina Railhawks in fifth place. Three wins, a draw, and two losses for 10 points in fifth place. Scorpions with a +2 on the differential. The Railhawks with a -1 on the differential. In sixth place, the Ottawa Fury. Two wins, a draw, and three losses. 4-7 points with a +2 on the differential. Tampa Bay Rowdies and the Atlanta Silverbacks are tied for seventh. Tampa Bay with a win, three draws, and two losses for 6 points. Atlanta Silverbacks, two wins, four losses, also 6 points. Tampa Bay has a -4 differential. Atlanta, a -8 differential. In ninth place, FC Edmonton with a win, two draws, three losses for 5 points. And the Indy 11, once again in last, no wins yet. They have two draws, four losses for 2 points. They have scored 9, allowed 14, with a -5 differential. So tough times. It's, once again, brand new side in the NASL spring season as the Indy 11 are going through their inaugural season here in the spring season, and they'll have a fall season to play once we're done with the World Cup. Here we go. Round 7, spring season, the schedule, and it comes up big here. The New York Cosmos hosting the Indy 11 this Saturday at James M. Short Stadium at 7 o'clock Eastern. Ottawa Fury hosting the San Antonio Scorpions at Carleton University at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern. At 7:30 p.m. Eastern, the Tampa Bay Rowdies hosting the Fort Lauderdale Strikers at Al Lang Stadium. Only one match in the Florida Derby. It just does not seem fair. At 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central, the Minnesota United FC hosts the Carolina Railhawks at the National Sports Center Stadium. And finally, 9 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Mountain, FC Edmonton hosting the Atlanta Silverbacks at Clark Stadium. That is your NASL segment right there. If you ever want to follow everything in the NASL, NASL.com, the spring season will be wrapping up very, very soon. And don't forget these teams in round 3 of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. It should be exciting, and here are those games involving the NASL Round 3. May 28th, the New York Cosmos hosting the Brooklyn Italians over at St. John's at Belsen Stadium. The Carolina Railhawks hosting the USL Pros Charlotte Eagles at Wake Med Soccer Park. The Atlanta Silverbacks on the road at the Chattanooga FC side of the MPSL. Also, let's not forget the Indy 11 as they'll be hosting the Dayton Dutch Lions over in Indianapolis. The Fort Lauderdale Strikers hosting the Laredo Heat of the PDL over at Lockhart Stadium. The Tampa Bay Rowdies on the road at Orlando City, the War on I-4 in a soccer stadium. Actually, that match has been moved, I understand, from the ESPN Wide World of Sports complex at the Walt Disney World Resort. It has been moved from there over to the Seminole Soccer Complex over in Sanford, Florida. So, and of course, let's also not forget, because I almost missed one, at Toyota Field, San Antonio Scorpions hosting the North Texas Rayados of the North Texas Soccer Association in one of those league games outside of the NPSL. They were formerly the NPSL until they left it at the end of last year. So those are your 8 sides in the NASL. into the U.S. Open Cup Round 3. All games except for Rochester Rhinos hosting the Reading United AC. That will be on Tuesday, May 27th. And the rest of the games will be on Wednesday, May 28th. Your match of the round being streamed on U.S. Soccer's YouTube account has not been announced yet, but we'll find out when we get closer to the up and coming days. And don't forget, a lot of soccer this week. Don't forget this coming Monday, of course, on the 26th, 40 Scenes Fire Show number 194, May 27th, Rochester versus Reading in Round 3 of the U.S. Open Cup. New York Red Bulls travel to Sporting Kansas City on ESPN2. And then following that match will be the USA-Azerbaijan friendly. And then after that friendly, 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show will have a post-game show. And then on Friday, and then, of course, Wednesday, May 28th, the rest of the Round 3 matches in Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. And then Friday, May 30th, Round 3 review of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Once again, Friday, May 30th, Round 3 review. Come on over. Discuss everything you want here. Please join me and my guests as we discuss what's going on in American soccer. The World Cup is coming, everybody. June the 12th. Get ready for the 40 Scenes Fire World Cup review shows. Every day that's scheduled a match for the World Cup, join me after everything is done. We're going to get into the action right away. All matches, except for maybe one on the Saturday, where we're going to have four matches. And then, of course, let's not forget the week where it is two matches per day or per group. Of course, two early afternoon, two middle afternoon. And we'll have separate shows then as well. But stay here. Follow me on Twitter at DFeuerstein. Follow me on Facebook or friend me at Facebook, Daniel Feuerstein. Keep on coming here, blogtalkradio.com/Feuersteins Fire. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be a lot of fun. I cannot wait. We're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to have a lot of guests, a lot of people calling in, and we're going to have ourselves a fun time. I guarantee you that. We're going to have ourselves a fun time here on the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. Now we're talking about the New York Red Bulls. And once again, it's a slow start that puts them behind the eight ball once again. The late goal in the second half, in second half stoppage time, and it became 2-0. And that was the final as the New York Red Bulls lose for the first time in a long time at BMO Field to Toronto FC. And you know what? This is the situation right now. This is the first time this year the New York Red Bulls have lost two consecutive matches in a row. I thought they had a good start. I really thought they had a good start to the match. It was that one little turnover that costed them three full points. It was a bad pass by Lloyd Sam that missed Dax McCarty. Toronto takes advantage, quick pass to Jermaine Defoe, who was basically kicked off the world – well, wasn't really kicked off. He was really omitted on the World Cup roster for Brazil. So what does he do? He takes advantage of the situation, and he roofs the hell of a shot tucked inside the crossbar to make it 1-0 in the 12th minute. And then after that bad turnover – that's when the club looked disjointed. They looked terrible. They just did not seem like they wanted to play, or basically they just looked lost. And when you have that situation in front of you, when you have that situation going on, that's when you have to wonder what the heck is going on. That's when you really have to wonder, are the players all of a sudden listening to Mike Petke? Do I think they are? Yes, I think they are. Is it coming through? That is the question. And you know what? If the sophomore slump is coming, then I'll probably say it's already here. But definitely there's too much going on in the span of slow starts. I mean, they had a hell of a start. I think they had a decent start against Chicago, even though that goal should never have counted in the first place. But how do you respond when you have a 2-1 lead at half and then you come out sluggish to start the second half? That's a bigger question mark for me. And then all of a sudden you go to Toronto, and while it looked like it could have been a decent, I think it was a decent start, but that one turnover basically just, I would have to say, that turnover just took them down. And it's a shame, because they had great opportunities in the second half, which, of course, they looked better in the second half. But still, there is a problem when you have these moments of slow starts and it needs to be fixed. Is it an older team? Well, obviously, yes. Is there room for improvements? Definitely, yes. But you have to say that moment where you thought that the club was going to steal a point out of Toronto late in the second half was that moment that Bradley Wright Phillips was right place, right time. And unfortunately, he bangs the ball well over the bar at point blank range. That is the time when you're thinking that's, you know, nothing is going right for the New York Red Bulls. And you're thinking to yourself that the Bradley Wright Phillips era, or at least the 4-game span of scoring goals, is over. Because that streak has now been broken. But you know what, though? Let me say this. Just because he didn't convert against Toronto does not mean that it's all over for BWP. Because he is playing with such positiveness, confidence, and, of course, being with one of the greatest strikers in the world. And here's the other reason why. Arsenal winning the FA Cup, first title. So guess what? Thierry Henry, Bradley Wright Phillips. Bradley Wright Phillips and Thierry Henry, they're going to definitely turn it on now. Turn it on for the playing for the Red Bulls, because that magical moment did happen. But once again, slow starts are hampering this team. Why are they hampering this team? I can't put my finger on it. They look great one game, then they just completely fall flat the next. They look terrible at the start of the game. They look great in the second half of it. They look great in the first half, and then they look like crap in the second half. I don't know what's going on. I can't explain it. I don't know how to explain it. But the truth of the matter is that it's happening, and it really needs to stop. It really, really needs to stop right away, because these guys, they have to start coming together and start playing the full 90 minutes like they did against Philadelphia, against Houston, against Columbus, against FC Dallas. They have to start putting it together and not take off either coming back from a lead to start the second half or to start matches and playing bleh. That's what they have to do. That is the situation that they need to do. So is it really Petke, which I don't think it is, or is the mentality of the players acting like if this is a walk in the park, which it is not, because it really shouldn't be? These are games that they have to keep fighting for. I understand that the World Cup break is coming, and they still have a date in the U.S. Open Cup in the fourth round, facing either at home against the Brooklyn Italians or on the road to Long Island against the New York Cosmos. And, you know, I have to say that I'm a little disappointed right now with U.S. soccer, because apparently it's an either-or situation. And when I say an either-or situation, I don't like these dates. Well, I like one of them. I just don't like the other one. And here's the reason why. Let's just say on the 28th, if the Brooklyn Italians do find a way to defeat the New York Cosmos in their round three matchup, the Brooklyn Italians will make the trip to Red Bull Arena on Wednesday, June 11th at a 7:30 p.m. Eastern time start. If the New York Cosmos travel, if the New York Cosmos defeat Brooklyn, they will host the Red Bulls out in Long Island at an 8:30 p.m. start time, which is not a big deal for me. It's not a big deal for me. The big deal for me is that it will be on Saturday, June 14th. And as everyone knows, that the Four Seasons Fire American Soccer Show will be doing World Cup review shows on every single day there are games down in Brazil, which would mean, I'm hoping, there will be, or at least this match will be streamed as U.S. Soccer's round of the match, or match of the round, however you want to pronounce it. I am not happy for what U.S. Soccer did with the either-or situation. I wish that both games would be scheduled on June 11th, whoever the Red Bulls will be awaiting the winner of. I will not be able to go to Hofstra University if the Cosmos and the Red Bulls do meet that Saturday night. I do not care about any of these other games, but I do care when it comes to me not being able to see the club and covering it properly and getting you your interviews when we have these types of matches going on. And it's a little disappointing for me at the same time, because it is a World Cup year. Maybe U.S. Soccer could have held off. Not because, oh, I'm scared of the Cosmos beating the Red Bulls. No, it's because everyone can truly enjoy this. Everyone can truly enjoy seeing this matchup for what it really should be. Hard-nosed, good old-fashioned pause. Right now, I think it's a little bit tainted at the moment. Because will everyone truly go over to Hofstra University at Shewart Stadium to watch this Open Cup match? I think right now this should have been kept or reserved, to be fair and to be honest, as a possible fifth round, round of 16 matchup, or the quarterfinals, because I still think the Cosmos has plenty of talent that can definitely face the Red Bulls then. Situation should have been reserved for 2015 or later in the round, because we all know round five will be on June 24th and or June 25th, Tuesday, Wednesday, when you're going to have those matches, two matches in the same group starting at 12 and then the next bunch starting at 4 o'clock. And then afterwards, then you can have this setup. June 14th, four, count it, four World Cup games being played. Saturday, June 14th. We're talking about a big match between Italy and England being played that day. Colombia versus Greece at 1 o'clock. Uruguay, Costa Rica being played at 4 o'clock. England against Italy, that's going to start around 6 o'clock. And then you have, of course, Ivory Coast versus Japan, and that's going to be at 10 o'clock. So you're going to have, well, I'll say this. They changed up the times. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. I got it back to where it should be. So noontime, Colombia, Greece, 3 o'clock, Uruguay, Costa Rica, 6 o'clock, England, Italy, 9 o'clock, Ivory Coast versus Japan. This is where, once again, I am not happy about this because of the World Cup situation. I truly believe this would be better if these two teams faced each other in the fourth round. That's the truth. That's what it should have been. That's how it probably could have been, but it's not. But there you go. So we'll see what happens. I felt round five, at least round of 16, maybe you have the Red Bulls pair up with one of the Pennsylvanian sides, Reading again, Harrisburg. We'll see what happens. But that's what's going to happen now, and we'll see what the results will be after May 28th, 27th and 28th. Once again, we have to go and talk about, once again, a certain referee that is an embarrassment to his whistle, to his shirt, to the referee community in Canada, and referees all around the world. Once again, Silviu Petrescu is incompetent when it comes to the laws of the game. Let me just say this right now. He's not the reason why they lost the Red Bulls. The Red Bulls did it all by themselves. How is it that apparently you've been informed by Major League Soccer that if there's a shirt pull in the box, now let me say the foul was not committed in the box. Foul was committed outside of it, but that's enough to say if there's a shirt pull by a player, if it's in the box, obviously it should be a penalty right away. If it's outside the box, it has to be given as a free kick. The league has told all referees from the U.S. and Canada to watch that closely. Johnny Steele got his shirt tugged from behind. Was there a foul call? No. Was it in the box? No. The foul was committed outside, just outside the area. But it continued into the area, and then Johnny went down. Johnny Steele was fouled from behind by the shirt pull, dragged down. Where is the card? Where is the foul call? Where is Petrescu? Nowhere. And then in two situations, handball in the Toronto area as the Red Bulls are attacking. Now, the first one, you can say, doesn't look like it's hand to ball. It could be the other way around. But his arms were in a unnatural position by the defender. Where is the call for handball? Not there. And then the next one that was crossed inside the area, leaping to block the ball, to block the ball from being crossed. And where was that one? Nowhere. Because that was handled a lot worse and a lot easier than what the first one looked like. We have to contact the Canadian Soccer Association about this man. Do we really have to contact them and say that this man is not interpreting the laws of the game correctly? You know, there is always going to be that one particular official from each side of the border when it comes to our officials from the U.S. or Canada and how they are basically dictating or interpreting the laws of the game. Because once again, I don't want to keep harping on it. I really don't. But the truth is simple. The truth is very simple. Outside of Mark Geiger, I think our on-field officials are not doing the job they're supposed to be doing. Because right now, Mark Geiger will be the only referee from the U.S. pool that will be calling matches in the World Cup. I mean, he did a phenomenal job in the Confederations Cup. He is the top-notch referee right now in the North America outside of Mexico. Geiger is the only one right now that is doing his job, and I think everyone else right now is starting to fall. It's not because I watch these referees when they're officiating Red Bulls games. I'm watching these referees in every game that is in front of me on the computer, on the TV, either through ESPN or through NBC Sports Network. How can we have our on-field officials do better? Do they have to be retaught every single season? Should they have a little mini rule book or a little mini laws of the game book in their back pocket on their smartphone? Should they carry a smartphone just to remind them how to do their jobs? I find it very disheartening, very difficult to support them when they're not doing their jobs. You can tell me if I'm wrong. It's all right. It's all about debate. It's all about what do you think, what do I think. The truth is I don't trust our officials. I don't. I don't think they're doing the job the proper way and the correct way. I truly believe they can be better. They act all arrogantly for the wrong reasons. The wrong reasons. They should not be like this. They have to go out there, do their jobs. And I understand, you know, I'm not asking them to be perfect. I'm not asking them to go out and to just have a flawless game. I understand there will be mistakes, and I understand there's going to be some problems, but when there's a blatant disregard for the laws of the game, they have to be called out on it. That is why I am screaming, I'm shouting, I'm asking, if it's pro, please fix it. If it's the referee department of U.S. Soccer, please fix it. If CONCACAF is involved in it, please fix it. So all I'm asking for is to fix it. It needs to be fixed. And if it's not fixable, then I'll say it. Maybe it's time to bring someone over from UEFA. Maybe Pierluigi Collina should come over. And maybe he should come in here and fix our problems. Because right now, I have no trust outside of Mark Geiger to officiate an MLS match properly. Is how I feel. And I think we need to see some turnaround sooner than later. That's all I'm saying. That's all we're going to try and do here. And that's all I would like to see happen. And now it's time to reflect. I would have to say the Red Bull player of the month. You know who I'm talking about. And that's right. I dare to BWP, Bradley Wright Phillips. Bradley Wright Phillips has been a monster on the field. Bradley Wright Phillips has been a terror, an absolute terror for the Red Bulls. And it was a shame he didn't convert in this match against Toronto, because my God, he has been absolutely fantastic playing these last 4 to 5, 6 matches. I mean, 2 hat tricks in 4 matches. He gets the hat trick against Houston. He gets a tying goal in Columbus. He gets the match winner down in FC Dallas. Even though it's a loss, he makes it 2-1, 5-3, penalty 5-4. I mean, my God. 8 goals in 4 matches. 9 altogether when it comes about for the first goal, for the first match of the season down in over in Vancouver, just to break up the clean sheet. Bradley Wright Phillips has done a marvelous job of competing, being with Thierry Henry up top. He has been absolutely fantastic. It is an unbelievable thing to see a guy coming over from England, from Europe, last season in the transfer market, in that window. And he needed the time to get acclimated with Major League Soccer, and then all of a sudden, towards the tail end of the season, he's getting goals, he's setting up goals. He has a big playoff goal against Houston. He scored his first MLS goal at Houston. And whenever he sees orange, he's putting in 3 more. Bradley Wright Phillips has just been an unbelievable player for this club. And he has done the job fantastically. He's been fantastic. How many more adjectives can you say about Bradley Wright Phillips, BWP? He has been sensational. He was working with Thierry Henry. He knows where to be when Henry is crossing the ball for him. Thierry Henry, I know his job is to score goals, but he can also set him up as well, and he has been sensational setting up those chances for Bradley Wright Phillips. Bradley Wright Phillips has been on a complete tear. He has been superb, and you know what? I got to tell you, I'm enjoying this. I'm enjoying seeing this player coming out of the blue and doing the job that he is doing right now. If anything else, you'd have to say for Wright Phillips, it has been a pleasure to watch him transform. And at the moment, but I have to double check this. I do have to double check this because I want to make sure that I am correct in this situation. Because right now, taking a look at the goal leaders and shots on goal leaders, Bradley Wright Phillips leads the shots on goal with 18, one more than Clint Dempsey, two more than Dom Dwyer and Will Bruin. At the moment, Bradley Wright Phillips is your golden boot leader with 9. Clint Dempsey, Eric Torres, Dom Dwyer behind by 1 with 8. João Plata in 5th with 6 of them. So as of right now, Bradley Wright Phillips is doing the job. Bradley Wright Phillips is absolutely doing the job for the Red Bulls. He's doing it brilliantly. I'm very excited to see him doing well right now. It's been absolutely fantastic. Because I'm telling you right now, if this guy is going to really continue on his tear, this club, either as Metro Stars or New York Red Bulls, never has had a 20-goal season leader. Giovanni Savarese never got 20. Clint Mathis, more than 20 in all competitions, but never 20 in an MLS season. Juan Pablo Angel fell short by a goal, and he has 19. He has fallen short by one goal. That was the year he came to MLS in 2007. He could have gotten 20. Unfortunately, the last game of the regular season, it did not happen. Can this be the season Bradley Wright Phillips can earn 20 goals? Because if he can, he will jump past Juan Pablo Angel. That is the truth. We'll see what happens down the road. Bradley Wright Phillips. But I'm telling you right now, if he can turn it on the way he has and he can keep turning it on and be very consistent, we'll see what's going to happen. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be a lot of fun. I cannot wait. Is there a problem with Dax McCarty? I don't know. Did he look awkward in that match? He did. We know he had a bit of a back problem. Hopefully that's going to be fixed up. But if there is a back problem, we know he took care of it during the off season. But hopefully he'll be okay and everything will be fine. I think he'll be okay. Sometimes these things happen during the game. You don't look right. Something in the air. Maybe he stepped wrong, and it just all of a sudden he picked up a slight little pull that we don't even know about. But we'll see what happens. I want to congratulate Chris Duvall getting his first MLS match under his belt, coming in as a second-half substitute for Kosuke Kimura. Did well, A little hairy at the end. Obviously, he was not trying to bump into his own keeper in Luis Robles, and Toronto got that second goal off of very easily. But let's go back to that situation. The Red Bulls are making a sub before the whistle blows to start the second half. Obviously, Duvall is ready to come in. Obviously, the paperwork was already inserted to the fourth official. Why is Petrescu not allowing Duvall to come into the match and allowing the Red Bulls to play with 10 men? Why? Do you understand where I'm coming here with this about Petrescu? Incompetency. He turned something that is a basic thing. A basic thing. You allow the substitution to happen. Now, the last time this sort of thing happened, Clint Mathis came back from World Cup duty, was ready to come into the game. The problem was he was not on the list of substitutions. That was the fault of the coaching staff back in the day. That was the fault of the coaching staff. Because if Clint Mathis is not on the list of substitutions, then obviously he can't play. But you have this referee allowing a farce to happen. A big farce. Allowing these shenanigans to not allow a player who has his substitution card handed in already, the information handed in, and he's still not allowed on the field to substitute. Why? Because Petrescu decided to say, screw it, the second half. Is this why we're considered farce? Is this why we're not considered Major League, because we have these rogue referees dictating the laws of the game differently? And they have the right to pick and choose whether to start the match without a substitution being made, or if the substitution was ready to come in, to ignore it and to blow the whistle for the hell of it just to make the other side look foolish, intentionally. This is what I'm talking about. This is what I am talking about when I say that everything is improving, but the referees have not. And it's getting a lot more difficult for me to believe that these referees are doing the right thing. Do I think they're being taught the proper way? I think they are. I just think that they have an ego that they have to lock up, because they can't do this. It makes the game a farce when you have officials who do not truly follow the laws of the game. And that's why I'm very upset about this, and that is why I wish they would fix these things. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of the Red Bull segment, as we have some time remaining here, and if you are ready for the World Cup, as I am getting ready for the World Cup, I'm telling you right now, it's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait when everything gets underway Thursday, June the 12th. Brazil will host, or as the hosts, Brazil will face Croatia, 4 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. On Thursday, June 12th, Friday, June 13th, Mexico will face Cameroon at noon. Spain will face the Netherlands at 3. Chile will face Australia at 6. And then on Saturday, June 14th, noontime, Colombia against Greece, Uruguay against Costa Rica at 3, England against Italy at 6, the Ivory Coast against Japan at 9. Sunday, June 15th, the Swiss will take on Ecuador at noon. The French will take on Honduras at 3. And Argentina will take on Bosnia-Herzegovina at 6 o'clock Sunday night, June 15th. And, of course, the first match for the USA will be on Monday, June 16th, 6 o'clock start time, as they will host, or excuse me, not host, but they'll face Ghana, noontime, Germany versus Portugal, and then at 3 o'clock, Iran facing Nigeria. Every single game will have a review show. Thursday, June the 12th will be at 6. Friday, June 13th will be at 8. Saturday, June 14th will be at 11 o'clock at night. Sunday, the 15th through Sunday, the 22nd will be at 8 o'clock. On Monday the 23rd through Thursday the 26th, we're going to have two separate review shows. We will have those games after 12 o'clock start time. So Netherlands, Chile, Australia, Spain on Monday, June 23rd will be played at the same time at 12 noon, ending around 2 o'clock, which means that will be our first half of the review show for half an hour. And then after the 4 o'clock matches on the 23rd, Cameroon versus Brazil, Croatia versus Mexico, at 6 o'clock Eastern. And the same thing will happen on Tuesday, June the 24th, Wednesday, June the 25th, and Thursday, June the 26th. And then when we get to the knockout stages, round of 16, quarters, semis, we will have review shows after all games are done. So let's just say the winner of Group A faces second place Group B, and on the same day, Group C winner faces Group D runner-up. After that day on June 28th, we will have the review show. So I hope everyone's ready for the World Cup. I'll be ready for the World Cup. I am excited. I cannot wait. Let's get this show going. I am ready to go. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank my guests. I want to thank Neil Morris of The Independent. I want to thank Clint Alexander, the Chief Executive Officer of the San Diego Flash. I also want to thank my good buddy Earl Reed, who covers the Philadelphia Union. And I also want to thank everybody for listening to the show live and on archive when you come over here, blogtalkradio.com. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Join me as always on soccernewsday.com, covering the Red Bulls and anything else in American soccer. I'm glad you listened tonight. Thank you for listening to this program. And as always, please, I beg of you, I'm pleading with you, to enjoy your football. Thank you once again. Have a good night. Talk to you next week. It's going to be another busy week. Number 194, USA versus Azerbaijan postgame show, U.S. Open Cup Round 3 review. Enjoy yourselves. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye for now.